got you. Okay. So we'd like to welcome AC6IW. That's Mr. Jeff in Greenville. And Jeff, will you want to, while you're here, you want to make some comments?
I just heard you guys just up on the radio, but has there been any announcements about Field Day? Isn't that this weekend? And I was looking it up, and I guess it's somewhere out near Traveler's Rest, but I'd like to know details about it because I want to try to go and meet some people in person.
We'll get you the man with the plan. KI4DOS, KO4NUE.
NUE, KI4DOS.
AC6IW's got a couple questions for you. I guess, Jeff, go ahead and call your station, sir.
My call is AC6IW. The question I was going to ask is just details about Field Day this weekend, when it starts, when it ends. I think I've got the location off the Radio Club website, but any other details I need to know. This is AC6IW.
Here, Jeff, this is KI4DOS, Donkey on Skates. It's going to be this weekend. The actual Field Day starts at about 11 o'clock Saturday morning. That's for setup and all of that. And then it goes till 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. It's going to be at 449 Mush Creek Road. That's just above Traveler's Rest, but it's a Traveler's Rest address. So if you put in 449 Mush Creek Road, Traveler's Rest, 29690, I believe it is. Then your GPS, that'll take you right to it. They are going to be some folks up there on Friday evening, late. They're going to have some dry camping, and they're going to set up a couple of tents maybe and whatnot, but the actual Field Day does not start until 11 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Now, you say 11 o'clock Saturday morning until what time on Sunday?
Until 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. It runs from... in reality, it runs from 2 o'clock Saturday to 2 o'clock Sunday. As far as the contesting goes, we as a club are not going to be contesting this year. We're just going to be out there for those that are, make contacts with them, and have some fun and set up some radios and antennas and that sort of stuff. The club will be supplying sandwiches and drinks throughout the event. They're going to have supper on Saturday night. That's going to be hot dogs and hamburgers, and they want you to maybe bring a little side dish for the Saturday evening meal if you want to do that. Let's see, what else can I think about? We're just going to go up there and have a good time and kick around and get hot out in the sunshine, I guess. Hopefully it won't rain like it has in the past last few years on Field Day. But we've always had a good, pretty decent turnout, and we've had a good time up there playing with the radios. This year we are not going for points in the contest, though, so hope that helps you out, Jeff.
I was just planning on dropping in and saying hi to some people sometime on Saturday and trying to bring a friend, and I think maybe my girlfriend will go shopping in TR while I talk to you guys in a little bit. But I'll look forward to it, and hopefully there'll be a bunch of people there. Are you guys going to probably be monitoring this repeater? I'm guessing. This is AC6.W.
WKI4DOS. Jeff, there will probably be somebody on this frequency. They'll talk in. They're going to have some signs posted up there on Mush Creek Road, probably out to Highway 290, and kind of let you give you directions into the place. you know, you bring some friends if you'd like. They don't have to be hams to operate the radios. They will have somebody there that's, you know, like an extra class or something will be sitting there on the station, and they'll probably do what they did the last couple of years is use the club call, W4NYK. And even though they're not a ham, you know, there'll be a control operator sitting there. And if you got some folks that are not licensed yet and are thinking about getting their license, tell them to come along. We'd love to have them and let them maybe get on the radio a little bit. Hope that helped.
Look forward to seeing you. This is AC6IW.
Take care. Have a good evening. And AC6IW, KI4DOS, back to net.
KO4NUE for the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Well, Jeff, I'm glad we could get you linked up and get you some information there. All right, so are there any additional stations that would like to check in? Please call KO4NUE. Anyone for comments or RagChew, please call KO4NUE. And stand by for my net report. That's it for tonight. We had a total of 51 check-ins, which is pretty good for me. So I'll now return the repeater back to normal amateur use, 73s to all on the net, and it has been a true pleasure to be your net controller tonight. This is KO4NUE, and I am clear.
NUE, KI4DOS.
KO4NUE.
That email that Tom sent out, he wanted that spreadsheet sent to a different email. But I put that in there and it didn't do anything. Is it .com or .org or do you know?
Got the email address you need to send it to. Are you prepared to copy? Address is Chad L. Hightower at gmail.com. I'll be compiling all of the data, so just send it to me, over.
Tom said it to send it to him, Tom Poole at W4ATP, but he did put .com or whatever but on the end of it.
Yeah, roger that. Him and I have talked, and I'm going to take that I'm going to take that responsibility over for him. So he knows all about it. Just send it to me. And if you want to, Gary, send it to me via email if you can. If you can't, because it's not a PDF, just take a picture of it and text it to me, and I'll get it on a hard copy and for you know, historical for the group, so they can view it. Just whatever's easier, it doesn't matter. But it's all coming to me anyway, so just send it
at gmail.com.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay, it's on its way.
Okay, thank you, Gary, and I'll give you a holler tomorrow. KO4NUE, 73s. I'm clear.
Okay, bud, let me know if you don't get it. If you don't get it, I'll take a picture of it and text it over to you. Not a problem.
KO4NUE, KI4LZI.
KI4LZI, KO4NUE. Good, Andy.
Gary said out there, these are where he is. He heard four or five people in UHN. Same place up here where I'm at, I only heard one. KJ4, what's her called? KJ4UYO Mary. And I heard her about quarter of a scale. She's very readable, but she was only a quarter of a scale here on the signal meter.
Well, me and KO4HYC and KO4HYD, we heard absolutely nothing. I mean nothing. So, I don't know what to say about that. That's know. I just don't like 70 centimeter, especially after tonight.
One thing's involved in this. I've noticed that from living here all the years here where I'm at, this time of year, UHF does very, very, very poorly. And that's more affected by the leaves on the trees than VHF is. So when I was talking about doing UHF here in June, I was afraid it might turn out something like this. Fact that here where I'm at, I only heard one person.
Well, I think that's probably the intent, Andy, is to see kind of, you know, what the leaves do and how it affects everything. But these guys do a great job with this. I mean, it's amazing what they've, you know, how they got this worked out. But I did participate, and I gotta be honest with you, I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I don't know how many times I checked at my radio, you know, if I got something wrong. But I never heard a thing.
Kind of through experience here where I'm at over the years here between UHF and VHF. Back years ago when we used to do the pumpkin festival down that pumpkin town around that church and all down there, UHF Simplex done pretty good. Or say at a ham fest or the flea market, UHF Simplex does pretty good, but you go to getting out of the flat areas and go to dealing with a lot of leaves, I mean, VHF does better in this time of year, and even it's not perfect, but it does better than UHF at this time of year.
Well, like I said, I don't know what to think. When I tell you I didn't hear anything, I mean, I had my squelch down to zero, and there was one time where I heard the static level change, and that was when Ann was transmitting, but there was no audio, no voice, anything. It was just, you know, I didn't know what to think, Andy. Still don't really. But I'm after tonight. I'm not a fan of UHF.
It works, but when it comes to Simplex in the summer with UHF, you better have a very, very small contained flat air. Like I said, at a ham fest, a flea market like that. A lot of times, some of us, when we go to some of the ham fest together, we'll use 446.7 then, but you're not in a real big area, and it's almost always flat. And as a result, it will work, but in general, this time of year, over any large area, if it's not flat, this time of year with UHF, your capability is very, very limited.
Like I said, I learned tonight, and I don't know what to think. I've got a 2 meter 440 Ringo Ranger 2 and a 440 beam, and every time each station, when they called, I was switching in between both antennas, and I didn't hear anything. So I'm just, like I said, I'm feeling a little let down, but it is what it is, and I can't wait to see the data.
Well, see, I knew before we even conducted it, just for my own situation here at home in this hole that I'm in, I didn't expect it to be anywhere near like it was in January. One, January was using VHF. Two, there wasn't no leaves on the trees at all. That's about as optimum of a time simplex that you can have is during the heart of the winter months when there's no leaves on there. You remember all that I was telling you when you first got in here about how the leaves know affects different bands? This here's a classical example of it. When it comes to UHF simplex, it's better in the winter months. 2 meters will work now. It works better than the UHF will. It'll still be affected some, but not to the degree that UHF is. I know from hearing some of these UHF different repeaters, whether it's first responders or here even amateur, like that 442-400 up on Caesar's head. You're using this tri-band vertical I got right out here. There's times that, I mean, just trying to get into that repeater up there, because this net that we do used to be on it years ago. And, I mean, I would have noise on my signal right and left, but that tire up there, best I remember, is about a rock that it's on. Is 100 foot, but that repeater antenna's about at the 60 or 70 foot level on it. And the back part of this land here, where this other part of this hill's at, it just gets right in between me and it.
Well, like I said, I don't know what to think. There's a couple of stations that's pretty close to me, actually. That I, you know, I thought, well, I'll be able to hear one or two of them. But, yeah, like I said, absolutely nothing. But I'm going to go ahead and get things logged and finish up my paperwork like Gary, and I'll go ahead and forward this to Tom, and I'll keep a copy too. But, I got to be honest with you, I was not impressed. I mean, I was impressed with the exercise, but this band, 70 centimeters, I don't like it.
Until digital started coming in, most all your first responder law enforcement was on UHF. And here at my location, I mean, it's a daily it was to hear. We're still over here on Pickens County for the moment, still on it, but Greenville County used to be on it years ago, too, and various others where Sheriff's Department would use UHF. And this time of year here where I was at, I might hear the repeater, I may not, and this is repeaters up on the mountaintop.
N4 DJC.
AI4 LZI.
Good evening, Andy, and good evening, Chad. My limited amount of experience in UHF is it works a little better, you know, if you're in-ground buildings and that sort of thing. But that's about it. It just doesn't have the, it's too high in frequency to have any much in the way of tropo openings. I mean, you get them. You got your media scatter on it. I mean, it's just not, it was really designed for point-to-point, you know, repeater leaking, you know, short distance repeater leaking. And also, like Andy said, a lot of public service people use UHF, especially people around, you know, houses and buildings and inside cities and stuff, because it penetrates a little bit better than a, you know, like inside a building, it may work a little better than a VHF will.
Thing I noticed, Jerry, was, you know, I don't have the best SWR on this 440 beam I got. I think it's 1.6, 1.7 to 1. I've got a 50-watt radio, and one thing I noticed was, I mean, my power was horrible. I mean, it was like 30 watts, and I looked at my radio, and I thought, what is it, 50 watts, and then I said, okay, well, it must be that SWR that's messing with me a little bit, but I don't like 70 centimeters at all, but I can see where it has a purpose, you know. But I don't think that's something I would want to really kind of depend on, I guess. But, you know, that's just me.
KI4LZI. People started going to 70 centimeters because this band here, 2 meters, is no more frequency pairs left here for repeaters anymore here on this band, but just like I said before, but I didn't know about LMR 400 back in 06. Due to 70 centimeters, I wish back when I first set this station here up that I had used LMR 400 on a counter to 70 centimeters. When it comes to, Jerry agreed with me, when it comes to 70 centimeter UHF or further up in UHF, loss is extremely critical. And SWR is extremely critical. You can't afford to have any loss on UHF at all, period. Go ahead, Jerry. KI4LZI.
If you look at the dB loss on LMR 400 at 150 megahertz and then at 450, I mean, at 450 it's probably 3 times as much. And so you lose a lot of signal. And Chad, a lot of radios, now not all of them now, a lot of Yazoos are 50 on both bands, but a lot of radios, the 2-meter side of it will run 50, but the 70-centimeter side will only run about 35 or 40 sometimes. And I don't know, I mean, that's Icons and Kenwoods and stuff, that was pretty common, you know, in years past. Now, I don't know if it still is or not. I'd have to look up for like a 2730 ICOM or maybe a 5100 ICOM to see if that's still true or not, but it may be. But I know that was pretty common too. But it was, we used it a good bit. When I used to travel, I used it a good bit, you know, especially if I was working in town or somewhere like in Atlanta or in Austin, Texas. We had a bunch of stuff down in Austin on 70 centimeter, a bunch of repeaters. And I could, you know, get in my hotel room working pretty well there, whereas the 2 meter may not do it, but the losses are just terrible. Like, you can't run. The guys that run them for satellites, they run LMR 800. Some of them even run LMR 800 even, or even maybe some Meliacs too sometimes. It's terrible. I mean, as long as you're pretty close, you know, your antenna's pretty close to your radio, and you got a real low SWR, I think you did pretty good. But otherwise, it's a specialized band, I guess, is the best way I can put it. It works good for certain circumstances, but other ones, it's terrible. 2 meters is by far a more versatile band, in my estimation, anyway.
It's special, all right. it's got special needs. But like I said, I just was thoroughly impressed with the exercise. But I am not at all impressed with 70 centimeters at all. You know, that does beg the question, though. I have been doing a fair amount of digital work on the 2 meter side here in the last month, because you know what's going on in the club and all. And you know, one thing I have noticed on, you know, digital modes is it's not that critical that my station receives that well. It's critical. Well, not critical. It's not as picky. You know, something that I cannot talk to, you know, analog. I am able to distinguish and move traffic or information
in a, you know, low receive, high noise area. So, I'm kind of impressed with the digital stuff. It's taken me a while to get to this point, but I just wonder if that would be the same old 440, because I see Charlotte has got a 440 iGate, but after tonight, I'm not understanding why.
You know, in our preamble, it talks about the DMR repeater that's on Glass Mountain. Guess where it is? It's on 70 centimeters.
Do some work on digital, but it's mostly, I don't work on DMR. I do some stuff on Fusion and on D-Star. And D-Star, it works pretty good, but it's got a bandwidth, it's like 6.25, and the bandwidth on Fusion is like 12.5. Fusion sounds better, but D-Star works a little better, I think. But it does, you don't get quite the distance, I don't think. I think the biggest thing that you're seeing when you're using FT8, for instance, or FT4, or any of the other digital modes on HF is, yeah, that's just a solid carrier, basically. It's like using CW. CW gets through where very few other things do, and FT8 is just a real efficient method. But one thing, the they know your own frequency, and they're on your frequency. I can't remember how the FT8 works exactly, but anyway, the frequency, you're not off frequency. They're locked onto each other, basically. That's something to do with it. Also, when you run FT8, you run a full key down just like you would CW instead of sideband. It's just a peak envelope power, so it's not really the only. If you'll notice, when you're on sideband and if you got a good peak meter, you only run it if you, for instance, if this radio I've got here, 705, just running 10 watts. It's 10 watts on FM, 10 watts on CW, 10 watts on FT8, but if we get on sideband, it may be putting out 6.5 or 7 watts.
Well, like I said, I am still, I don't do DMR. I do have Echo Link here on the computer, but I don't do DMR. I don't do D-Star. And Jerry, I've tried my best to get interested in Fusion. Both of these radios will do it. But I can't like it. I don't know what it is. I think maybe because it's internet based. There's nothing to me. There's nothing like being able to move your voice over RF and RF only. There's just something appealing to me for that. I am cheating a little bit with these digital modes, but I am using RF. With peer to peer, it's radio to radio and no internet. So I'm tickled with that, but I just can't get into it, Jerry.
Tell's the guy. I wouldn't have the DMR HT I got if someone hadn't given it to me 2 or 3 years ago, but someone gave it to me, and as a result, I messed around with it a little bit. But the only thing I can get DMR repeaters with that HT-TYT I got, the one on Glassy, and back middle part of January this year when we had all that snow coming down, there's one up on Caesar's Head, too. There is. And I was able to get into it then. But ever since that time has done passed and gone from here, I can't even begin to bring up that DMR machine that's up on Caesar's Head, the so-called Greenville DMR machine. Just can't do it. Like I said, this Every band has its advantages and disadvantages. And Jerry's right talking about some of the radios. That's like this 8900 I got here. It does 50 watts on 2 meters, but only 35 watts on 70 centimeters. A lot of the radio gear limits you on UHF quite a bit, what it does on 2 meters for sure, but every band has its advantages and every band has its disadvantages. You have to work it in with what you're doing as to what's best that'll work for you. I just know I could pick up a lot of this also from years ago, like Jerry knows himself there. For a long time, law enforcement, sheriff's departments used to be on UHF, they was, and I could pick that up, hear what I could pick up, but this time of year, it wasn't all that good. Go ahead, Jerry, KI4LZI.
TJC, well, Ted, I'll tell you this much about the digital modes, like fusion, you know, the fusion to me, I've got a radio that'll work fusion, and I work it through a hotspot, or I can work it through a PC, either one. And there's a couple of fusion repeaters in there. Fusion sounds better, but fusion is a little, unless you have a computer, you don't really know, you don't get as much information as you do like from a D-Star radio, and because all the calls are registered, you don't have people interfering and that sort of thing. And also, I got a couple of friends in New Zealand, one in Australia, and a couple in Japan that I keep in touch with, and I can always, as I ain't trying to wake them up in the middle of the night, I can always talk to them on D-Store. And mine's just RF into the hotspot, and with a hotspot it works, you know, D-Store works better. I think you can send text messages and that sort of thing, and like you said, a lot of people say it's not radio, and, you know, that's... It's just another tool in a toolbox as far as I'm concerned. I couldn't pick up a mic and no one will get in touch with my buddy Dan in Auckland, because, you know, 15 meters, because, you know, the chances are it'll work, chances are it won't work. And I think it works good for some people like me who don't have, not able to get up a decent antenna on HF and not even a real good one on VHF, UHF. Just another tool. But UHF, I'm always saying UHF, you didn't have as much interference, you know, like you did on two special pagers. It used to be with pagers and that sort of thing. I know Andy remembers this. The pager gives off the frequency a little bit. It should drive you nuts, give you all kinds of intermod on them. But UHF is just, like I said, it, you know, they use it on satellites just for crossband, just like you use it for crossband repeat. It's a good way to link it in because it's short range. And you're not going to get any interference from somebody like you would if you use a 2 meter frequency. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, so, with that being said, I tell you, I've got a TYT 220 radio that I got set up. Up in Liberty, and I gotta be honest with you now, I kinda like that 220. I don't know why more people don't use it, but I do like it. It's, I don't know, there's just something about it that's it's comfortable. How about that? That's a good word. It's comfortable.
KI4LZI. 220's a lot like this band right here. 2 meter band. They're both VHF and perform about the same, but from all that I've read and heard others saying that's been active in this hobby long before me, reason there's not as many people on 220 is for the longest period of time you couldn't get. This country here is the only country with this band, 1 1/4 meters, 222, is available to amateur radio operators. It's the only country where it's available. And most radio manufacturers are selling equipment to sell around the world, and As a result, there's just not that much radio equipment available for this, for the 222 band. That's what I've read and what I've heard. Go ahead, Jerry. KI4LZI.
You see, well, you know, one of the things I found years ago when ICOM and other, and ICOM used to make 220 rigs, you know, they made 220 handhelds, and the Kenwood D-74 has got 220 on it as well in a handheld, and ICOM made mobile rigs too, but they used to make, Andy remembers this, his IC-3AT, they had a 2AT, 3AT, and 4AT, and one of them was 2, one of them was 220, and that was 440. So a lot of the guys, if you'll listen to that Mount Mitchell repeat, a lot of guys up in the mountains like 220. And one of the reasons I think it was popular was back when 2 meters was really busy, when the repeaters were just loaded with people. If you had a 220 repeater and 220 radio, it was almost like having your own private channel, because there weren't that many people that had them, and you had it all to yourself, basically. It does, the propagation on it is pretty close to 2 meters. It works pretty well. But like Andy said, though, it's only available in amateurs in the U.S. I don't think any of the major manufacturers even make a 220 rig anymore that I know of. And the same thing with the repeater situation. When amateur radio kind of went into a decline after some of the sunspot cycle went away, and a lot of people just, you know, passed away and didn't get interested in it. But if you look at 220, it's still a lot of activity out there with it. But it's kind of like it's got pockets of it somewhere. Go ahead, Jim.
I'll tell you one thing that I did notice. I mean, I don't want to sound so negative about 70 centimeters, but the beam I've got up here at the house for 440 is it's sitting on top of my 2 meter beam, 5 or 6 feet above it. And one thing that I noticed and never thought about until it was up, because Anna's kind of picky about, you know, the way things look around the house. I'm not. You know, antennas, that stuff don't bother me. But as soon as you come around the driveway and you see, you know, the beams up on top of the house, first thing you notice is 440 is, the antenna is considerably smaller. I think that's an advantage. If you're in, you know, housing development or something, and you need to be mindful of that, that's a definite advantage. But I don't have to deal with that out here. I pretty much just do what I want to with antennas and all. But I could see where that would be an advantage in the city.
Tells the guy, I've got a 38A over here, and a ring go up on top of the house, but I'm going to have to move it, though, because I found out something that I didn't know about down in the house. I saw a pipe, a steel pipe up there and attached it to, but I didn't know until here later what my mother told me, that it's not that way all the way down, and it's broke down there. So I'm going to have to move that Ringo I got for the 1 1/4 meter band here at some point in time. But I got a 38A here, and Randall kind of put me onto that and how to find it. Yeah, Gary, you was talking about that. I wished I could find a good 038T in cream puff, good working condition, that someone wouldn't try to, you know, rip me off over. Because that would fit in with the 202s, the 404s, the 0280, and things like that. But as you said about when those radios was made, they're not that easy to find, and I believe Elenco and Jetstream builds radios for the 1 1/4 meter band, and that's all it is right now that I know of, that there's radios built for that band. Go ahead, Jerry. KI4LZI.
JC. Well, I know one thing. You can find 2ATs still now. People sell for $25, $30, and 9 times out of 10, the only thing they need to have done to them is, you know, get in that thumb wheel and take it apart and get that little thumb wheel frequency deal on them cleaned up a little bit. You can still buy batteries for the daggum things. I mean, people repack them a lot of times, too, but you know, years ago, I'd see people with two of them hanging off their belts like gunslingers at Dayton years ago and back in the early 80s in Charlotte. But they were durable radios, and they were, you know, they didn't have, I don't think, and you'll have to correct me, I don't think they had toning encoders on them, though. I think the later ones might have, but I don't think the 02, the 2AT or the 2A, the one, I don't think 2AT, I don't think they had a toning encoder on them. Go ahead, Chad.
Jay, I will switch gears here for a second. So, I'm not sure how to ask this question. So, typically, how long does it take you to learn to operate your radio? Now, what I mean by that is every button, every function, all the bells and whistles. I'm not talking about just picking up a mic and talking on it. I'm talking about, okay, well, you can do everything with the radio, you know, the buttons and all, and you've kind of got all of that mastered. How long does that typically take you?
You're talking about new handhelds like they're building now, like the 52 and the 74 and the ASIC stuff. It takes me at least, I'd say, it may take me 2 or 3 months to get everything, and then especially if it's got APRS on them. And once you learn one system, though, if you like the ICOM menu system different and the Yaesu system different, the Kenwood, you know, just if you just stick one system, I'd say at least 2 or 3 months, you still might not be able to find all the stuff on it.
This 991 I got, I've had the thing a year now, and there's still stuff on it that I'm not using. I mean, I've got to a point where I know what it is, but you know, I'm not using it. One of them is operating split. The way I'm looking at it is that when I was intimidated when I got the radio because there's so much that comes you can do with it. But I finally came to the conclusion that I think for me it's when I need to know how to do something. When I move on to something else and I need to know how to do it, then that's when I learn it. But as far as I know right now, the only thing I don't know how to do on the radio is operate split. And I know what it's for, but I just don't have a need to do it. But and it's been a year, a little over a year. So it's taken me some time.
Chad, if you're talking about HF rig now, like a 991 or 7300 or 705 or something, any of these radios like that, I'd say at least a year, maybe longer than that. I mean, there's so many menus, you get menu into menu into menu on those things, and a lot of that stuff, you know, A lot of us were never used. But it takes me, I'd say probably a year for something like that to really get a good grasp of a HF rig.
Well, I had a little encounter the other day. Is encounter might be a strong word, but Anna's she's got her license, and so she has been a little bit intimidated by the 991, and I've been working with her a little bit, and she's gotten a little bit more comfortable with it. Well, she came in here today, turned it on, and when she turned it on, it throws up my call sign, KO4NUE. So the next question out of her mouth was, I want my call sign when it comes on, my call sign. So I got looking in the book, and sure enough, I got all these repeaters and all this data, got the memory set up, with KO4NUE. Well, I didn't know this till the other day, but set her call sign up in here. She can change call signs in the radio, and that's a totally different memory. Her call sign's got her memory, and my call sign's got my memory. So, I mean, there's something right there. I didn't know that I've learned about the thing. I'm just, there's a lot to this thing.
Go ahead, Andy.
LZI, from my understanding, I'm back on no icons right now. The 2A didn't have a tone board in it. The 2AT does, but it's the last five channels that's tone capable in it. The last five channels are tone capable on the 2AT, and the 2A period didn't have a tone board, but what I was talking about was a 038T ICOM HT. What I was talking about. I've got some of these other old ones here you're talking about. They're in need of repair. They do. I got a 202, 028T, 028T, a 202, 404. But what I was talking, and they need, most of them need repair work, but an 038T was for the 222 band that we was talking about a while ago, and I'm assuming it would have been like the 028T, the last five channels in it would have been tone capable in it, I'm assuming. KI4LZI.
And yeah, what I was going to tell you, Chad, was, when you set up your call sign, a lot of these radios, especially 991 or like a 705, sometimes that's got to do with, it's not just the call sign for the radio, you also setting up like for some of the digital modes too, it's like D-Star or Fusion, I think you have to be separate for those. But, that's not surprising to me that it's in there, but it took some digging to find it, I know. So when you start looking at passband tuning and split frequency operation, that's contents and stuff, and that's kind of above my head too. I don't think I've ever operated a split frequency on an HF radio ever. I've done passband tuning before, but I've never operated a split frequency like that. And being able to set the filter widths and all these, because see, these filters, they're not mechanical filters like the old radios were. They're not even surround. I mean, these are digital type filters, and it's not the, you can adjust the filter width on them, and adjust the treble and the bass and the mid range on them, on the transmit and receive, the digital or analog. I mean, the SM05, it's got two manuals, and each of the, one manual is almost 300, the advanced manual, I think maybe 300 pages long. I mean, I had books in college worth that many pages, I put.
Jimmy, yeah, so I got one manual with the thing, but I have been, you know, I'll read it and study on it, and then if I struggle with it, I can usually go find a YouTube video on it. I can learn a little better if I watch it, you know, after I've read it. The other thing is, that as far as the split frequency goes, I could see where that would be useful, especially, you know, for contesting and all that, but I've tried to put it into perspective, because I'm just not into contesting. I'm not saying anything bad about it, but, you know, if you want to go somewhere and monitor in a frequency range that you can't transmit in, but if you want to pull information out of one band by listening and transmit it on another, I mean, I could see where that would be useful. But I just, the whole contesting portion of it and DXing, I will occasionally do that, not as a contest. I keep a logbook in here. And sometimes on Sunday, you know, when it's, you know, nap time or something, I'll come in here, turn the HF rig on and see what I can do. You know, keep a log of it. But I do more work, I do more stuff on 2 meter, than I do on HF. I know that sounds crazy, but that's the truth of it.
Bill's a yacht. Well, like I said, I got antenna issues here for HF new power lines and all, so I can't put nothing up and leave nothing up anyway, but from what I understand, a lot of people say, though, some people in this working split contest, and some of them will get down in the advanced class or extra class part of the bands, and others will receive in another part, general class part of the bands. And as Jerry kind of says, some people kind of limit how many they get by doing such stuff as that, by working split like that. But if I never, like I said, it's expensive to fix the power line issue I got up here, and I can't afford it. Reason I don't do a lot of HF, but y'all go ahead and carry on. I got to go take some insulin. If y'all are still here later, I'll come back later. KI4LZI.
NUE. Yeah, Andy 73s, and I'm on duck out too, Andy and Jerry. I'm starting to show my tired, and I'm gonna need all my strength for tomorrow. So, Jerry, I appreciate you dropping by and talking with me for a little bit. I always like to hear you. You got a lot of knowledge. I always like to listen to you talk about radio. So. But I'm gonna say 73s, Jerry, and you have a nice night, sir, and I'll maybe see you on the frequency tomorrow, maybe. KO4NUE, I'm clear.
Yeah, good evening, 73. Chad, you take it easy. I'm kind of getting tired myself. My eyes is getting kind of droopy. Take care, and we'll talk to you tomorrow sometime, probably. Good talking to you, as always. KO4NUE and 4DJC Clear.